I like to believe in a society that we are able to become better by being critical, not just optimistic about things that are going to get better. Things are not going to get better by itself, and things are going to get better through the process of working on it.
Says Leandro Erlich, who I met for a new episode of our Weltkunst podcast, Was macht die Kunst? What is art up to? The Argentina-born artist is currently in Wolfsburg for the installation of his exhibition Weightless at Kunstmuseum Wolfsburg. And I can tell you, he is literally turning the museum upside down. So I am wondering, Leandro, what is the art up to in your life right now?
Art has been always a way to ask questions about reflection, about wondering and questioning and all kind of subjects. In particular, I like to think on those subjects that we assume as a solid truth, on those subjects that most of the time we do not take the time or we do not consider relevant. I like to think about what reality is, and while we are living, actually, is we are already in something that is a multiform layer of reality. It's a concept that has been since the beginning of time. To me, it's a way to explore the boundaries of what are our certainties and to find a way to create experiences that eventually lead to a different state of awareness.
You were born in Buenos Aires in 1973, and you already had your first solo show in Buenos Aires at the young age of 18 at the Centro Cultural Recoleta. What did you show there as an 18-year-old?
I would say I show the eagerness of wanting to be an artist, primarily, and there were paintings at the time. But yes, I started very early. I grew up in a family where everybody expected for me to go and do some kind of university career. And even though I did start fine arts in Buenos Aires at the time, fine arts was really dated. The program was really bad. And people were discussing about figurative or abstract painting, things like that, in 1989. So then I left, I quit the fine arts and started I jumped into the University of Buenos Aires and I studied philosophy, but not aiming to reach a degree. And then it was all a random events, a fellowship and a grant that I got from a foundation and from the Ministry of Culture. And then when I was 27, I moved to Houston, Texas, where the Museum of Fine Arts allowed me to step into a postgraduate program for artists. And well, it was a journey.
Maybe we can go back a little bit in time. What kind of household did you grow up in? You come from a family of architects, right?
Yeah.
So how was your youth? How did you experience art as a kid, as a child?
You know, my parents, my father was an architect, and my mother a geologist. And my aunt, my brother also architects. And so there were no artists, and neither they were into the philanthropy of art, but the art has been always something in high esteem in the family. And my father has been always a very creative person, even in his own constructions, inventing ways to do things. He was keen in mechanics, and so he managed a way to have the house with a roof that opened and there was an elevator inside the house. Some of these inventions didn't work that well because he didn't have the money to pay for, you know, for a real professional work. And so he managed to do things in a very crafty way. And I think I inherited that spirit of making probably from him.
I have to say now that I got a sneak preview of this amazing exhibition, I can imagine that you, I mean, this thought that anything might go, that what is upside, you said your father opened up a roof, or where you think there are certain certainties, but you turn them around and you make something different out of it. So I can see that root of this sentiment maybe in a father who's so crafty and imaginative.
Yeah, definitely. I do not usually talk about that, but I, for some reason I felt like that this time was I mentioned this to Andreas and Dinos before. You know, I grew up also as a child during a very scary dictatorship in Argentina. And, you know, there was some, at that time in our family, in order to, let's say, be safe, you do not supposed to listen or repeat as a kid anything you hear at home was potentially a threat. If you say that in school, you know, if you say something about the government, or so I felt like this is also a kind of a codification that early on I receive as information, where you can understand that reality is not is not an open book. It's not something lineal, and is something that always is a subject of that requires, you know, awareness, critical sense. And I believe that along my life, even over that period, but even today, you know, the way that the events are happening in the world, all the way from social to the political to the fake news, it requires a sense of awareness to try to at least have a minimum sense of what's going on. And in my work, all those, let's say, devices that articulate with perception and, let's say, fool your perception, for me, it's not about, of course, there's something playful on that, but to me, it's also a way to allow people to doubt and to question. And all the work is made in a way that the device is more or less simple. People are able to understand how something happened or why things are seen in a particular way. And you know, and going back to the word perception, I think perception is a key word, is a key element, because it's our inherent tool that everybody born with, and is through perception, before the incorporation of the abstract knowledge, that we get to know the world. All this, all human evolution started, and philosophy has been triggered, and we made mistakes, or we were wrong, before Copernico, with the way we perceive the planets were all spinning around the Earth, and that's the way that we perceive it. So I think that. To me, is the interesting aspect of perception. There is something that triggers the participation, which I also think that is important to find, a strategy to communicate. I think that for any artist and for an artist, is very important to find a way to create interest in what we do, and I believe that the interest has to come from the work, and we cannot, you know, sit the audience in a chair and explain them how important is for us what we do and go through, you know, a lining up concepts. I think there are other times to do that.
Your show at the Whitney Biennial in New York in 2000 and the commission of the Argentinian Pavilion at the Venice Biennial the year after have certainly been a breakthrough for your international visibility. In Venice, you created a swimming pool allowing access to so the audience could come in from the side, but it felt like being underwater without having to come up and take a breath because you had air around you, but it felt like water visually. And it feels like you want to push open doors. You defy gravity. You open these doors for the viewer and with your art. What doors do you open here in Wolfsburg for all the people who are listening now and who are going to see the show in the future?
Unlike previous exhibitions, this is the first time that there is a series of works all together that they are articulating together in order to create a source of a story which has many, many layers. Primarily, I would say that I like the idea to propose something that will inspire others. I like the idea to bring something new that has potentially the capacity to light a thought, an emotion on others. And I believe it's a time in which many tragical and sad things are going on. And I consider myself someone very optimistic, yet it's a difficult time for several reasons. And there's a lot of anxiety and there are very few elements to, let's say, dream about the future from the ecological point of view, from the social point of view, from political point of view, the environment, global warming, the wars. How can we, you know, draw a line that regenerates the enthusiasm and bring positive actions for us and for the generation of my children and for the generation to come? I mean, it's a moment in which I feel responsible for being, let's say, the last generation of the 20th century that step into this new century. And it's kind of it's a torch. And I think that at the same time, we must be it requires be critical continuously. We need to open doors, as you said, of a future. And that future, I don't like to be drawn only by the guru of the world, Elon Musk. I like to think that there are other ideas, that there are other things to think, that the scientific and technological paradigm that we are living in has amazing great things, but there are still things that has to be thought and requires people to think and to share and interconnect. But also believe that has to be done through a level of enthusiasm. We need to create somehow. There is a lot of anxiety, depression, antidepressive pills, and all kind of things going on in order to overcome the time we are living in. And I think we need new questions and for other people to find new answers.
One great thing about the show is that it's fun. but it also is very thought-provoking. And you just mentioned Elon Musk, so you created your own rocket here. It goes above, how many, is it two stories high?
Yeah.
So I can already tell, you can go inside, you can, there are windows from the outside, you see other people in there floating, and you go inside, you see yourself, but you also connect with other people that you didn't even see before, and you, it's very curious how you don't know where somebody pops up, and I have no idea how, I mean, there's, it's done with mirrors, but it looks really totally stunning when you're in there, and so surprising, and I think it's a rocket that will not go off into the space. It's here in the museum and it will stay in the museum. But the wonderful thing is that you explore the inside and you explore the other people somehow. You explore who you are in the museum with. Maybe I didn't notice this guy before, but all of a sudden he looks at me and he's floating above me. So I think that's a very humanist approach, that you design a rocket where you explore actually society more than space.
Absolutely. It's exactly that. It's that's the point. I think that there is a kind of disguise of in the exhibition that addresses the outer space and a space exploration because there is a rocket and because there is a moon, but really is not about the outer space. I would say that it's very much about the inner space. It's about us, and it's about interconnecting with people. And as you mentioned, and that happened many times in other occasions in my work, where people get to interact with complete strangers. And if you think in general, despite art, everything to me, it seems very functional. The society is built with a strong sense of functionality and purpose. Art, somehow we escape to that command. But if you think in society, there are no many places where you potentially start talking to someone that you don't know. Because usually that happens because you are in a, you like to play tennis and then you go to a club or, you know, like there are, it's difficult. Public space usually does not offer many opportunities for people to engage in a conversation that could be a thoughtful conversation. We are pretty much, we live in a society that provokes a lot of isolation and, this is an exhibition that I believe that the work to be seen is not just an object that we are witnessing, but also the work requires to be with someone in it or on it, and that person becomes part of the work. So looking at the work is looking at other people and vice versa, you know, other people looking at you. And I think this is a positive action, and I found people living or sharing time and conversations within the exhibition space, and I found that very, very important on a social level.
When you build environments that are immersive or installations that are immersive, where people go in, they interact, they are part of the work, or they make the work come alive. I'm thinking about the facade that you showed last year in Milan, where there's a mirror as big as a house and there's a facade as big as a house and people, but the facade is flat on the ground and people can climb over it and also feel weightless. Do you watch people interact with your works? And is there a difference? Can you say, let's say in Italy, they hang by the balconies. I mean, are people interacting similarly all over the world with your works? Or do you see that, let's say in Japan, people interact differently with a pool than in, let's say, in Italy?
I would say that the interaction is in general quite similar, despite that the cultural idiosyncrasia is different. because what activates the work, let's say at the first encounter, deals with perception. And perception is common to all. And this doesn't have a culture or language. And perception, everybody, I mean, unless you are disabled in some of your senses, everybody can see, everybody can hear, everybody can touch, everybody can smell. And I think this is something, it's a common ground. Therefore, people in general interact more or less the same. Of course, there are people who are more extroverted and introverted. But the playfulness and at the beginning, what I would say changes is not so much the reaction. What it really, to me, is very important is the moment, whether it happens or not, the moment in which the work, okay, is fun, but also allowed to, you know, you go beyond that in trying to question and to understand what I, you know, within that experience, what is happening and what is this saying to me? And that, yes, it does change in relation to culture. You know, like there are places in which, let's say, more intellectual driven. Having said that, I found incredible interpretations from people that doesn't have, any college degree or any higher education. And I found incredibly thoughtful comments. And that makes me very, very happy, because you realize that in order to understand something complex is not necessarily a requirement that you have to go through. You need a master in philosophy.
Has your own art taught you about psychology?
I don't know. I mean, I always say that in Argentina, there are three things. Football, asado, which is the barbecue, and I'm psychoanalyst. These are the three elements that we produce mass production. Psychology. I don't know. I mean, I'm not so interested in the psychological, let's say, interpretation. You know, Lacan used to use, in order to explain some of his theories, he used to use devices with that deal with perception. So in a way, he there's one very famous of a hologram of a flower that you were unable to reach, and through that experiment he tried to explain what implies the desire as something that is not on the object that you desire, that you feel desire for, but the desire as a something that is within yourself, right? So there are interesting things. What I mean is I don't like the idea to use the work as a way to analyze behaviors, or I like the idea that the work is a fiction, and that fiction is able to inspire interpretations, and those interpretations are very, very important element that usually when we talk about art is not part of our discussion. Everybody is interested in knowing what the artist is doing and why the artist, what is the message of the artist, and everybody wants to get it right, and that's a mistake from my point of view, because art is an activity that is a collective practice. The artist produces something, and that to me is a 50% of a message. And then the other 50% is what the receiver is decodifying, and is the interpretation that the viewer, the audience does. And those interpretations can be, you know, as creative as the art, as the creation of the artist. So to work on and to respect and give value always by never underestimating the viewer, but the opposite, challenging the viewer to give value to this position, is something very important, because otherwise it's like what happened in general in society, which is like providing ideas, messages, thoughts to people that are already digested thoughts, for people to embrace something that they never thought, or whether they question. It's like something like, oh, yes. And, you know, it's like, and I feel, I like to believe in a society that we are able to become better by being critical, not just optimistic about things that are going to get better. Things are not going to get better by itself. And things are going to get better through the process of working on it.
It's beautiful what you say. And I also like your observation that the reaction of the people who interact is pretty much universal. It makes me very hopeful that there is a common ground, and that, after all, humans have very similar needs, similar reactions, similar desires, and even a similar playfulness.
Absolutely, yes.
I'm wondering, I mean, this is really amazing to walk in the museum and to be confronted with the moon, and then to look up and you see fields on the ceiling taken from satellite, or like as if you're flying over them, really this feeling of weightlessness. What does your studio look like, and how big is it? Because these constructions here, these installations are enormous. What does your studio look like?
Well, my studio is not that big. So if you have some room in your place for the moon after the show. No, the studio is not that big. The studio is in Buenos Aires, and, you know, the work, for works like this, for the exhibition, like here, we usually, what we do is to collaborate with local teams, and this has been happening for the last, you know, for 20 years. I mean, we produce part of the works in the studio. We conceptualize the architecture of the space. And then in terms of production, we try to find a more logical, economical way to, and sustainable way to do it, which is nice, because then we are we end by interacting and collaborating with people, and something really magic happened through the process, because it's a creative process. This exhibition, people may don't know when they come, but this exhibition has been from the beginning something very challenging in terms of creativity, because this is something that has been possible through not only the agreement of the institution of Wolfsburg Kunstmuseum and the curators, but also is a type of work that would have never been possible without this institutional frame. So that's also draw a line between the utopia of thinking on something that you would never be able to do, or finally achieving the possibility or having the opportunity, the great opportunity of producing this exhibition and share it with the audience.
This one work that is very stunning and beautiful and poetic and also sad and scary is Pulled by the Roots. It's literally a house as big as a house flying or hanging from the ceiling, and it has roots like a potted plant or something, and it's uprooted. So I saw the lights on inside that house. It looks like a working house, but it also looks like things are flying around in their lamp, table, books. So it's this uncertainty that we feel. And I was speaking to the director before, Andreas Baltin, and he said when he was still in Karlsruhe at ZKM, in 2015, you came up with this work there because there were construction sites everywhere and they were ripping up the streets, building the U-Bahn, tearing out the tram and building in the subway tunnels. So you came up with the idea there, and it's actually a house seen in Karlsruhe that was the model for this.
Yeah, I mean, that's when the first pool by the roots was created, inspired by the events of the ongoing construction, as well as other elements like the migration crisis in 2015. So there's always like several multi-factor things that. Yes, but the work, going back to your question, yes, it was created originally for the anniversary, the 300th anniversary of the city of Karlsruhe. And maybe because also we have this common past with Andreas, that brought me the idea that I wanted to bring that work into the exhibition, as well as understanding that this house will be transformed in its interpretation, in its reading, in the context of this exhibition, because now the house we could say that it's hanging from the roof. We could also say that it's orbiting around the moon. And yeah, as you said, this is a poetic image, and I want to say something related to the roots, the house. And a word that you mentioned before, which was this idea of immersive, right? And to me, I believe nowadays is a concept, is a word that is very often, we listen that quite often. And to me, it's not really the immersive. Architecture, to me, has been my vocabulary. And architecture and space is something I learned somehow at early age. And I like the idea to imagine that I use space as a vocabulary. And through this, I construct the stories. Architecture, architecture, we could say that school, we can say the school or the office you work in, or the lab that the scientists are working, are immersive spaces, because they are immersive. We are within these spaces. And I think this is the aspect that I found interesting in the idea of immersive. Immersive as something, as a place where you are in within a context that potentially does not allow you to have a larger view or thinking. And in this exhibition, Pulled by the Roots, it went out into the space. It went really, it's the opposite of immersive space. You are already somehow looking at things from a perspective from a satellite.
Often in your work, I get the idea, I can't believe this. Like the uncertainty or the kind of the make-believe also, that I'm not actually weightless, but in that installation, I feel all of a sudden, wow, I'm floating. So is that one intention of yours, that you want to give out this lesson to people that don't believe everything that you see and that, let's say, the media tells you?
On one hand, yes. On the other hand, I would say that in general, the experience is quite enjoyable for the viewer. So yes, you're facing something that place yourself in front of something that you do not quite understand, and it produces some kind of uncertainty. And those elements, not understanding something or the uncertainty, are not usually associated with something enjoyable. The opposite is produces anxiety. Here's the thing. I believe that in terms of going back to perception and so on, when we are children, we play not just as a matter of and being entertained. To play is the process of learning. And we learn, since, you know, we're born, we learn through playing. We enjoy, and playfulness also relates to this. The playfulness is a process of learning. Then we go into the conceptual learning of abstract learning, meaning language, write and read, and concepts and mathematics. And there is a time in our life in which we arrive to a point in which the sense of surprise, or the idea that it's kind of, we reach a point in which we believe, or we have the sense that we know all. I mean, even that we do not know, you know, we do not know all, of course, but we do feel like we know enough. And we know pretty much, I mean, then you can go into science and go into deep science, and you know you will be able to learn more and more. But in general, in the domestic, you will think that you know enough. And that is a very sad moment in which I believe young adults stop wondering and stop questioning. There's a feeling of, okay, you know, I guess I have to get, I don't know, I'm going to find a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and I will have children, I will have a job. And I think that it's important to bring something where you can still show that there are still things to discover. There are still things that are not what you expected to be. There are still things that are possible when even within the space that is enclosed and is in the middle of a city like a museum, do you find something that triggers the inspiration of going for, I don't know, a new idea, and awake that feeling of wonder that we felt at some point in our life when we were children. But now, when we are adults, is really important.
I can say from my own experience just now, I felt a lot of wonder. It was being, the moon looks amazing from the outside, but then you go in and it's being like being in the universe. And again, there's this feeling of when you see yourself as just a little element of the universe that, you know, you're one of very many, and you see all these stars around you. It's an unbelievable experience. I can imagine that there will be long lines for people who wait there to experience this, because it's so magic. One thing that's about to be installed now is vitrines that I have seen before, vitrines that contain clouds. How is that possible?
It's a etching glass. I mean, it's something that looks like clouds, but you immediately realize that there are layers of glass that they add up, and they construct this volume, the visual volume of a cloud enclosed in a vitrine, which is something, again, very, it's a dream, like the utopia of trying to capture something ephemeral. But once you will see them, you will notice that the perception of seeing a cloud is quite real, yet is as real and simple to understand how this is made. There is no cloud inside, and you can understand how things are made. And to me, that's very important. I think that's the something that, to me, more than ever, we reach a point in which we use technology, and we know how to use the application of technology, but we do not know how that technology works most of the time, unless you are a engineer, and in this work, all the time, what you see, you can understand without someone explaining to you.
You like to differentiate between the rational world and the irrational world. How much math and logic does one need to create magic?
Well, I think that in my case, everything is quite rational, because there is a sense of logic, is a very Cartesian logic that eventually is inverted, so everything that is not quite something is not. That's why I'm saying it's not surreal, even though it's not part of reality. It's a reality that plays or hopes or aims to make evident that the reality we live in is also part of a construction with another shape. So if you invert something within the reality that we know and you build it in another way, you could also think that that reality we know is also part of something we build, unlike, let's say, the universe. But we forget. I mean, for us, a chair is as real as a monument, and a monument is as real as a door, as real as a rock, or as real as a cloud. All these elements are real, yet there's a difference between a chair and a cloud, a door or a rock or a washing machine or a star. All those things are real, but there is a huge amount of reality that is a human construction. And I believe that we live most of the time enclosed in this reality that we have built. And therefore, to propose an exhibition that recreates and constructs such a universe is kind of a mimic of what is happening in the world.
Are you interested in the concept of surrealism and what surrealists have been important for you? I'm asking because some of the motifs, like the cloud or the floating house or something, maybe because they are so dreamlike, are also motifs that the surrealists were interested in.
I think that, to me, surrealism is not in particular something that I associate surrealism to a moment, I don't know, something more in the spirit of the unconscious, or, you know, the oniric, the dream. And of course, it's a proposition that deals and questions reality. But in my case, I feel like the questioning is less about the unconscious or the dream or a fiction of free association or the Freudian type of bringing elements that addresses things that may don't make sense in the rational world. That's how I see surrealism. I would think that I am more hyper-realistic than surrealistic. By bringing something that it takes a lot of effort to create things that must be looked as real as possible in order for us to consider or to associate with the reality we know.
Looking ahead to 2025, what are your plans and what are your hopes for the new year?
For 2025, I hope the world gets better, we reach peace, we find a way to learn something. I hope the society as a global entity, not beyond culture, I hope we manage to create links and bridges and establish an understanding that allowed us to be more intelligent. Is so stupid, it's so cavernicola, what's going on is unbelievable. The lack of understanding between people with, you know, in combination with all these technological amazing things that we created, tools for communication and that would allow us to reach others and to communicate better. So I hope, we managed to build a better future. I hope we managed to solve issues that are here on Earth that requires to be solved. And we can solve them. It's just, and I hope little by little we manage the way to lead to new solutions. And I am optimistic about it. I just think that we need to create strategies.
If time travel was real, what place and period would you visit?
As a friend of mine said last week, there was a confusion and someone was saying, where shall we go? And then someone said, let's go where we are. So that's where I would like to go in time.
What is your most important tool?
Imagination.
If you were an animal, what would it be?
Human.
Which game do you like to play?
Chess.
What is your favorite color?
Blue.
Do you have a recurring dream?
Not really.
Do you listen to music while you work?
Often, yes, I do.
Which topic would you like to see in an entire issue of Weltkunst?
Something that relates to interconnecting people, doing different kind of activities, and see how these artists, scientists, philosophers, businessmen, people are able to share thoughts and see how many things in common different people have. And I think in the diversity is where we may find some interesting things to explore.
Can you share a wisdom?
When we meet with people that are doing exactly the same thing we do, somehow we end talking or exchanging subjects that are not pushing very much for us to new dimensions.
Well, Leandro, thank you very, very much. And it's an amazing show, so everyone has to go see it. And it's up until July 13th, so that's very good news.
Thank you very much.
Der Weltkunst-Podcast Was macht die Kunst? Wird unterstützt von Volkswagen Group Culture. Im Kunstmuseum Wolfsburg ermöglicht die Volkswagen Group jeden letzten Mittwoch im Monat von 16 bis 21 Uhr den freien Eintritt ins Museum. Unter dem Stichwort Volkswagen Group Art for All gibt es darüber hinaus jeweils ein spezielles Programm. Mehr Informationen unter www.kunstmuseum.de.